Afternoon. Welcome back. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 730 WTMT, The Truth. And I'm joined once again by Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor and co-author of the newly released book, Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering a Century of Chinese Domination.
Aloha, Andy. How are you doing?
Just fine. Aloha Tuesday.
The APEC meeting in Hawaii. I just figured, you know, get in the spirit of things.
Yeah, you probably have a little bit of what feels almost like jet lag. You've been a busy man for the past 48 hours.
I think up to this point in the last 16 or 20 hours, I've done 25 radio shows. So, yeah. And I can say with all honesty, and it's not just because you're down the hall, is this one's the most fun.
It's easy, too. He could just get out of his chair, walk down the hall, plop down in the seat, and he knows that we're going to have some fun.
Your producer's nicer to me than the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah. But that's because I pay her, believe me. If she wasn't making a coin, she's looking at her going, what are you saying? All right. Every day this week, there's an excerpt from the book in the Washington Times, and today is no exception. The first question I have to ask you, though, after reading this is, how does China really feel about us?
Yeah, they hate us. the thing is, there is a bit of a mutual dependency. I think it's bad for Americans to take too much comfort in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they sell more to us than anyone else. Sure, we don't have any jobs left because they're all in China.
Right.
But they need us to keep buying their junk. And, you know, they're the number one exporter in the world now. And their economy is based on exporting. The number one destination of all that stuff is here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they need us to keep buying their stuff. And the reason they keep loaning us money and bailing us out, other than to get us dependent on their cash, is, you know, they need to give us some money so we can buy their stuff. But it's kind of like those people who are buying, you know, $50,000, $60,000 navigators that don't have the money, you know, zero interest loans or whatever.
Right.
I mean, we don't have the money to buy all this stuff. So they're giving us these loans just to keep the trade going.
Yeah. You know, every time I think about this, I think of one giant credit card issued to the United States of America, and in the background you see Bank of China.
I mean, it's amazing, you know. Yeah. The parents need to take the credit card away.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, but here's a problem that I see. We love buying those cheap TVs and other electronics and all the other junk that we get out of China. What do we have to do to survive? We have to stop buying that stuff?
Well, you know, I think part of it is, you know, the trade situation is so messed up. Everyone thinks that, you know, China is just a low-cost producer because of, you know, cheap labor or slave labor or child labor or handicapped labor or prison labor all the horrible things they do to keep the price of workers down. But, you know, they break all kinds of rules, too, health and safety, environmental. There's really not any standard, global standard on the books that they don't cut corners on.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is in the bottom line. So if you just hold them to the same standards the rest of the world hold, well, that equalizes the price a little bit, and then we could make stuff here again.
Yeah.
You know, and the flip side is if we're making things here, you know, people are making a good standard of living and have a better job. You know, service economy, when this country decided to cut off manufacturing and move to this glorious service economy, you know, we've heard about it for years.
Yeah, right.
Service jobs pay on average 50% less than manufacturing jobs. So if we bring those factories back, start making stuff here, sure, the price of goods will go up a little because it costs more to make things here than in China.
Yeah.
But people will be making more money, too, and have more money. So I think it equals out, and you have a better life in the end.
Yeah. Let me ask you something about the average American and their thinking when it comes to China. Do you get the impression that China, through its ascension to becoming a world super economy, that they were making things better with workers, kind of sharing, you know, the wealth with people in China? You think the average American thinks that? Because I actually thought things were getting better.
Yeah.
And after reading what you guys have written,
it's
obvious that it's gotten worse.
Yeah, things have gotten a lot worse there. Part of it is, the Communist Party is one of the best-run organizations, really, in the world. You got a lot of sharp people paying attention to what they need to do to stay in control.
Yeah.
So they look at everything, and they adapt, and they manipulate, and they make adjustments wherever they need to. So one of the things, one of the lessons they learned when the wall came down and the Soviet Union collapsed is they got together, and they're like, holy smokes, we need to do something differently.
Yeah.
And they really started rapidly doing things to increase the size of the middle class. But what they did then is co-opt the middle class. The middle class, which is almost 300 million in China now. The middle class in China is as big as America. But those people are happy with the Communist Party because they're richer than their parents were. So they look at the Communist Party as being the guarantor of their security. But in a country of a billion, 1.3 billion, the one thing the middle class doesn't want is more competition for the wealth in China. So they actually support the rich business owners in the middle class are the biggest, ironically, the biggest supporters of communism now because it keeps the masses down. It prevents there being more competition for the money in the country. So, you know, in this weird way, the Communist Party isn't a people's party anymore. It's an oligarchy. It supports the wealthy.
Right. And so these companies that want to expand get a break from the government because the government wants them to expand. They get cheaper money, right?
Right, exactly. And the flip side of that is since the government picks winners and losers, if any of these businesses start, you know, getting too uppity or start thinking that they're a Western company, you know, those CEOs and those chairmen can just disappear overnight and someone else is plopped in. I mean, you know, you don't want to.
Sounds like Chicago.
You don't want to leave the throne empty for very long.
The Chinese, have they responded to the comments of Barack Obama from APEC in Honolulu?
Yeah, they didn't really miss a beat. You know, they immediately said they were a little slower than our editorial page was. We responded to President Obama in 2 hours on Sunday, and they had about a 12-hour lag. But, you know, they have their approval system's a little longer.
He told them to grow up.
Yeah, I wrote an editorial, and then I approved it myself. So they had to run it up the whole ladder of the PRC. But within 12 hours, they said, essentially, maybe they read our editorial. They said, you know, Obama's saying this because he's in trouble. There's an election coming up.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about currency manipulation because his poll numbers are low. I mean, I'm thinking about Xinhua as a state-run news agency. I'm thinking about just rerunning the piece as an editorial in our paper and just saying, hey, we agree with Beijing, you know? For once, I'll bow to Beijing today.
Yeah, that's right. As long as you credit them, it doesn't
matter.
Yeah,
exactly,
right?
You know.
Do they
maybe a hat tip, you know, not a full bow.
Do they revel in the fact they don't have to play by our rules?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look, you know, the back cover of our book has that picture of Obama bowing to President Hu Jintao. That thing drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
But I think it answers your question. If you look at Obama, like, just bending over, bowing, giving a full bow, President Hu Jintao is ramrod straight, and he's actually sitting back on his heels.
Yeah.
He's almost grinning.
Yeah.
And it's because he knows he's in the driver's seat.
That's right.
So I think a lot of these things, you know, we bellyache and we huff and puff, and President Obama can say they need to, you know, obey the rules of the road. But nobody's going to do anything to them. You know, they're the one that give us – they lend us the money. It's like going and getting a huge loan at a bank and then telling them how they need to run the place.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're not in that position. We're the debtor in the relationship. And I think, you know, you just look at Hu Jintao's face in that bowing photo, and, you know, he knows he's the top dog.
Yeah. All right, how do people get the book?
Amazon.com, bowingbook.com, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore if you still have one.
Yeah. You selling them out of your trunk, too?
Exactly.
See, parked on the side of New York Avenue, trunk open. Hey! Holding them up. Two for Tuesday!
I think it's $18 or $20 on Amazon. I think with my signature, it's devalued by about $3 or $4 if I mar the inside pages with my autograph.
The book is called Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering a Century of Chinese Domination. It's by Brett Decker and William Triplett the second, and it's available now. Thank you, Brett.
Yeah, learn Chinese and
oh, that's right, it's written
teach
in Chinese.
Your kid, teach your kids
you
Chinese and
we'll see you.
Thanks.